just jumping. We're just going.
You guys ready to play podcast?
Let's play podcast.
All right, let's do this.
Shut up and sit down.
Me help you.
Hi, Sharon, thought I'd give you a ring. It crossed my mind, so now I'm wondering if you're not settled in, you might like to meddle in some adrenaline pumping peddling.
Oh, dolls, I thought you'd never ask. I'd love to get my hand behind some handlebars.
You are listening to another episode of the Dialed Podcast with Matt Lee Grand, Evan Price, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von Turing. The guys blabber on about themselves, talk to someone else about some stuff, and finish by blabbering just a little more. There you go. The show in a nutshell. Tip of the day. Talk does not cook rice. So quit yapping and get to it already.
You can watch me whoosh by on my push back, my tush high and my thighs bumping away. Seems like a sweet deal. It's in three wheels. Yet I steal the show from your Camry.
On my bicycle, like was icicle.
But now I'm cruising with the grace of a manta ray. On the home game from my own lane. Hey, Lorraine, off the chain. Yeah, you know that I'm a cycle.
Immediately regret this decision.
Hi, and welcome to the Dial Podcast. I am Jake Fondering, and I'm here with Lance Hepler.
Lance friggin' Hepler.
Friggin' Hepler.
Right here for your viewing pleasure. You get to see my pretty face today.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is...
If they're watching the live stream.
If they're watching it.
They'll all go back and watch the YouTube video just to see how pretty Matt
yeah,
is.
Yeah, we got a little bit of an atypical setup today, but we were supposed to have a fourth camera, and for whatever reason, that was not one to play nice. So Matt and... let's just introduce him. Ladies and gentlemen, what, Matt LeGrand.
Ladies and gentlemen of the internet, sorry, is my microphone coming through?
There we go. There's Matt.
Previously said, what's up, ladies and gentlemen of the internet, but you guys get the idea. Yeah, my camera didn't work, the fourth camera.
I think Lance was plotting just to be nice and snugged up to you.
Yeah, that's true. It's possible.
I am quite fond of Matt.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And coming to us today from Vermont, Mr. Ian Boswell, how are you, Ian?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Happy to be here. I understand fully the difficulties of technology, especially living up here. I realize we're on Starlink, so the internet should be stable, but sometimes I have internet issues. But I think we're set. I think the satellites are aligned for our call today.
Sweet. Well, we really appreciate you coming on. We have a different format that we're going to use today just because we don't want to bore him with all of our minutia that we normally run through for the first hour.
You don't
like,
want to hear 10 stories of me talking about all my stupid rides this last week? We're going to skip that.
Yeah, we're going
to
skip that.
To begin with.
Yeah, we'll do that at the end of it.
Maybe. And,
that'll be part of the regular podcast. If you want to listen to it, it'll be on the audio version. So let's kind of dig into this real quick. Ian, just a quick introduction of you. You are... gravel racer, you used to race professionally on the world tour. You're now working with Wahoo. What's going on? Why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah, goodness, where do I start? You want me to start back at year one? 31
sure.
years of
yeah,
history?
Let's do it. This is going to be the massive. We have this thing called the back pedal that we normally do. We can just do a massive back pedal instead of just last week. Let's do the whole life. Go.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've been riding my bike for about as long as I can remember. Although when I first started riding, this was before the era of Strider bikes. I wasn't really riding until I was 7, but the minute I could start riding a bike, I was immediately hooked. And I grew up in Bend, Oregon, out west, and was able to very quickly, you know, escape my house and, you know, just go ride around the neighborhoods and ride bikes. And I guess it was around the same time that American riders were doing well at, you know, in the Tour de France. And I was like, oh, I want to do that one day. And you know, just through, I guess, living in a great community that had a lot of cyclists, you know, and a good masters, you know, group of riders that could kind of guide me. And both my parents were, you know, avid riders as well. Was able to eventually fit on my mom's road bike, got first started with BMX and then mountain bike road racing. And yeah, kind of followed my way up through the ranks and eventually made it to the World Tour. And then in 2019, had a bad crash and decided I was, you know, probably not going to want to take those risks anymore, racing down wet descents in the Dolomites and Alps and all that, and, you know, jazz. Oh, and yeah, so I retired from professional road cycling, moved back to the U.S. here in Vermont, where my wife and I had bought a house. And at the same time, took a job in 2020 at Wahoo and have been there since. And then, you know, since then kind of been doing, I don't want to say dabbling in gravel racing because I take it a little bit more serious than that, but, you know, participating in, I don't know, 6 or 7 events a year, which still gives me, you know, the joy to ride my bike hard and fast with other folks.
Yeah. I wish I could dabble in gravel like that.
I know.
That'd be fantastic.
Growing up around Bend, did you do the local race scene around Bend? Did you do like the cyclocross races or the mountain bike races or stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, not so much cyclocross. I feel like growing up, I always, by the time cyclocross season came around, I was ready to do something else, you know, play basketball, I would ski or snowboard up in Mount Bachelor. I did do a lot of mountain bike races, you know, what was the Chainbreaker and...
Chainbreaker still around? Yeah.
Charge. I think so, yeah. So I did though. I mean, this is back when my mountain bike looked awfully similar to my road or my gravel bike today. You know, they're not that different. Even my new gravel bike might have more cushion than my first mountain bike. Right. But yeah, so a lot of mountain biking growing up, you know, just in Bend, my mom lived, you know, kind of on the west side of town. So pretty close to the Phil's Trailhead network of trails, which has, you know, grown a lot since I grew up. I was back there last summer and I rode down the Whoops Trail, which used to be like a fun trail. You could go down on a hardtail. And now if you're not willing to jump a 10-foot gap, it's not yes. that fun of a trail. And I don't have those skills.
Oh, yeah. That's fantastic.
Right on. So what is your role exactly with Wahoo?
That's a good question. No, I'm joking. So I actually work in the marketing department and I manage all of our like athlete and team relationships. Something that, you know, I didn't really envision ever doing something like this. And I guess when I was racing, I didn't really think about what I was going to do after my racing career. And when I came to Wahoo, there was kind of this void to be filled of, you know, someone to kind of, as the company grew and, you know, we had more partnerships and relationships with athletes and teams, you know, it was kind of dispersed amongst the marketing department and we kind of need someone specifically to fill that role. And despite not having a, you know, college degree or education, they hired me and thought I would be great at it. And I've learned along the way, but I guess, you know, at the same time, you know, I have a relationship and I guess an understanding of what a lot of the athletes and teams are kind of looking for and how they want to work. And, you know, it's been a positive, you know, shift for Wahoo and our athletes to be able to have like an athlete kind of work with the athletes and teams. Just because as an athlete, you know, sometimes you need a product like tomorrow, you know, you forgot something, you know, you lost something in a hotel or you forgot it. And, you know, not everyone realizes the panic that an athlete goes through if they don't have a product and they have their, you know, marquee event in a day or two.
Yep.
I understand that because I have done it before. So I'm like, okay, like, you know, so I'm, you know, do a really, you know, I guess put a lot of pride in like making sure our athletes have what they need when they need it for big events, because this is their livelihood. This is what they've been training for and working for. So just making sure that they're best supported from us at Wahoo.
Gotcha. Now the team, that's the Frontiers, correct?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have a lot of athletes at Wahoo, you know, not just gravel cycling, but we have world tour teams. We have mountain bikers, we have triathletes, we have runners, which is cool, you know, cause I've learned a lot more about other sports as well. You know, I kind of came up through a pretty narrow window of, you know, men's road cycling, which was kind of my focus. And over the last, I guess, 2.5 years now, have learned a lot more about, you know, triathlon and ultra running. You know, we work with a guy, Jim Walmsley, who's, you know, one of the best ultra runners in the world. So I'm just learning a lot more about, you know, kind of different endurance sports. And although they are different, there's like a lot of similarities when you kind of speak to these athletes and work with these athletes amongst, you know, mountain bikers or cyclocross, or, you know, now gravel cycling is super big and exploding. So just seeing the similarities across all these different, you know, genres of endurance sports.
I think it's important for our listeners to know, I'm sure they know who Ian Boswell is, but he was a world tour rider for a decade or more with Team Sky, Team Ineos, mostly also Katusha Alpecin. But he's done all three grand tours. He's even won a stage. I believe it was a team time trial and took third individually in a stage in the Vuelta. Is that right, Ian?
That is, yeah. Feels like a long time ago. But is that right? Yeah, correct.
Yeah. So there's quite the palmares that Ian has. So we're super pleased to have him on. One, the other thing that Ian does as well, he has his own podcast. It's called Breakfast with Boz, which is quite good, which brings up the question, Ian, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
Oh, yeah.
Funny you should ask. I actually just recorded a breakfast for a podcast that's coming out next week. And my wife made, it's going to spoil the podcast if anyone listens to both, but we made a Dutch baby, which I guess my wife had never made before. I'd
German pancakes.
Before, kind of like a, yeah, it's like a pup. Actually, I was like, on the couch working, and my wife just started yelling at me. She's like, "Ian, come in here. You got to see this." You know, because I think it kind of puffs up in the oven and then, you know, collapses when it cools off. But yeah, we had a Dutch baby for breakfast with some apple and, of course, some maple syrup on top.
Nice.
Jake, what did you have for breakfast?
I had a piece of sourdough toast and some coffee. Pretty boring.
Coffee.
Matt, you just had coffee?
Yeah, and I didn't even finish it either. I was like scrambling this morning with kids, getting them off to school and all. The whole, you know, the usual.
I had
Spindrift.
Yes.
That we're going to have here in a minute.
We are going to have that in a minute. I had a toasted croissant from Costco. You know, you buy the Costco croissants and they're really good for like 2 days.
You toast them and they come back to life.
And you toast them and they're really good. And then I put some Suzy jam on it. Do you know what Suzy jam is?
Suzy make it?
Suzy makes it. Suzy is Yuri Hosfold's mother. She is this super sweet lady that, of course,
jams and she gives them gravel racers.
Yeah. So well. Of course, my wife is super social, and so I've done all these races with Yuri, so Yuri has become kind of a friend, but what's happened is my wife has really connected with Yuri's mom, Suzy, so every time we're driving through California, we drive by Yuri's house, but we end up going to Suzy's house first. She only lives like a block from Yuri.
You're like, "We'll see you later, Yuri. We need to hang out with your mom.
We need to go hang out with your mom."
She makes great jam.
And she always gives us jam, this homemade jam. So
that's
nice. Yeah.
So you picked some up in California.
We picked some up in California, and I had some raspberry jam from Half Acre Farms, which is just really.
Do they do other things besides jams, or is that?
No, it's just jam, and it's just for her friends. So
I'm
special.
I gotta speak to Yuri because I'm pretty good. I thought I was good friends with Yuri, but I've yet to receive his mother's jam.
You're not to the jam level yet, Ian. So
yeah,
that's funny. And you're a father now, correct?
I am, yeah. So hearing Matt say scrambling to get the kids out of the door, we have just one daughter who's 10 months.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll change your life. People tell you and you're kind of like, "Oh yeah, sure, it'll change." But yeah, your schedule becomes secondary in all aspects.
How has that changed? Well, I'm sure the work stuff is just work stuff. I mean, that is what it is. But how's that changed your writing schedule?
Goodness. Yeah. I mean, it makes your rides more efficient. That's for sure. I'm not stopping for, you know, a long coffee stop or anything like that anymore. You know, I guess like I said, my daughter's only 10 months old. So it's like kind of every month she becomes a little bit more, you know, she gets more personality and a little bit more energetic. I guess this spring, you know, it's kind of putting in the big miles to get ready for Unbound. You know, she was still napping a lot and, you know, was relatively, I won't say easy, but, you know, there's not much you can, they're not really walking around or crawling or, you know, they pretty much just eat and sleep and kind of hang out. So the last couple of months has definitely been, less riding. but that's just kind of, you know, for a number of reasons. But yeah, I mean, I guess this time of year up in New England, you know, it's starting to, winter is on its way. So indoor riding kind of becomes my norm, which is also way more efficient for me to actually just, you know, get in an easy ride, you know, either before she wakes up or, you know, oftentimes in the evening once she's, you know, gone to bed, or in the middle of the day, you know, take a lunch break and go down to the basement for an hour or so.
Gotcha. We've got another guy who's usually on the podcast with us, Evan Price. Evan is a pro triathlete, races the 70.3 distance, kind of the middle of the pack kind of guy that's been slowly clawing his way and getting faster every year, and he's doing fantastic. Recently got married, and we just always keep joking with him that he's going to have kids one of these days and life is going to change because his current schedule, how many hours a week would you say he averages, Matt?
Like, he's, you know, somewhere between 30 and 40 hours a week. I mean, it's a lot of
training.
Yeah, he trains a lot.
It's ridiculous, but
it's it's a ridiculous amount of training. Triathlete, you know, you've got three sports, so you can really dish out a fair amount of volume. And, yeah, I mean, the rest of us on the podcast have kids, so...
We all have three kids. Yeah, Jake has three teenagers, basically. Yeah. Matt has three kids under 12?
Yeah.
Under 12. And all my kids are grown and gone and now just sucking bigger checks off of me instead of just time.
Yeah, well, I guess, will...
Yeah.
I was going to say, I will say it gets more and more fun as they get older, in my opinion, and I think you're going to have a blast. But you're in the thick of it right now, for sure. 10-month-old, and it's always like, you know, going around making sure they don't kill themselves, and it just gets, once they're more and more mobile, just gets harder and harder, you know, like, oh, look at those wheel spokes spinning really quickly. I'm going to stick my finger there or my tongue. That's a good spot to put my tongue. Try to taste everything, so.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, the thing I've noticed probably the most is like, it's not necessarily that I've been riding less or I don't have as much, you know, availability to ride. It's more kind of everything around riding. You know, I try to do a good job of like keeping my equipment in good order and, you know, keeping my bikes clean and, you know, trying to shower at least relatively quickly after the ride. I went out for a ride yesterday and I probably got back at like 2:30 and I didn't, you know, I was in my kit still at 6 p.m. just walking around the house, working, helping, you know, helping my wife. And so it's more
been there.
I mean, I still will make time to ride, but it's more everything else around the process of riding that has kind of, you know, shifted, you know, just my bike is seldom as clean as it used to be. I clean it when I have to now rather than when I should.
Well, just wait until she gets a little bit older. You can make that one of her chores. That's what kids are good for. Right on. Cool. You want to jump into some questions for Ian?
I do. I want to talk about gravel racing a little bit. I know that Ian has had this very storied road career, but if I recall, I think you had a fairly significant concussion, which kind of pushed you out of road racing. Is that what happened in 2019?
Yeah, I mean, I had a number of concussions over the course of my career, but the one I had in, I guess, spring of 2019 is the one that kind of, like, you know, brought me to the decision to, like, hey, I probably should stop doing this. I had a number of, like, I think six pretty severe concussions. So somehow I never, in all my racing, never broke a collarbone. I think it's because I held on to the handlebars whenever I crashed instead of breaking a collarbone would hit my head instead.
Yeah. You cushioned your fall with your head instead of your shoulder. Yeah, that's fair.
Yes, exactly.
So you when you retired, were you just going to be done and then kind of thought, hey, I've still got some athleticism left and some fitness. Maybe I should try some of these gravel races. What kind of pushed you towards gravel?
Yeah. Well, so, you know, when I decided to stop in 2019, there was a long period of time, you know, my crash was in March, I think. I didn't ride for, I think, like 5 months at all. You know, just recovering. I was seeing doctors and specialists and whatnot. And then eventually I was like able to ride again. And so I started, you know, riding. I really kind of fell in love with riding my bike again, just for how it, you know, I think all of us can attest, like just what it brought you just to get out and, you know, go pedal around. Even at the beginning, it was just 20 minutes, you know, it was a short ride, but I was like, oh my gosh, I just forgot about the freedom of just getting out on a bike. And then over the course of, you know, the rest of the, you know, end of summer and, you know, into the autumn, when I took a job with Wahoo, you know, one of the things that they had mentioned was like, hey, we attend all these events as, you know, as a sponsor, we have an expo. It'd be great if you, you know, feel up for it, if you want to just, you know, go and participate in this kind of growing gravel movement. I was like, yeah, sure. I love riding my bike and, you know, maybe I'll jump into these events and not really with the intention of racing or being competitive, just because I didn't know what I was going to be capable of at the time. You know, I didn't know if I was going to be able to train or race or, you know, if I had the technical skills to be able to hang with the riders in the front. But as we got closer and kind of further into 2020, I was like, okay, like I started training again and getting fit. But then we had the pandemic. So I spent the whole year of 2020 not racing at all, which probably even more so than, which even more so than, you know, the time in 2019, like just made me really fall in love with riding my bike again and riding my bike in a very different way than I had, you know, really ever before since I was a kid, where I was just going to ride because I wanted to ride rather than I had to go ride, and, you know, not always riding the same loops and not always doing intervals or anything, just like going and exploring. And then 2021 came around and I did my first gravel race was down at the Rule of Three in Bentonville a couple of weeks prior to Unbound. And it was a mix of gravel roads and single track and paved roads. And I did well there.
If I recall, you were in the mix with Payson until the final single track section, where Payson's off-road prowess kind of shone. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, that was, I mean, we had a group, I think there's three of us, myself, Payson, and Kevin, I'm spacing on his last name, but he works at the Meteor down there. Kevin Spear, maybe, or something. Yeah. Super strong rider, but we got to the last single track section, and I'm not a mountain biker, and I just told Payson, like, all right, we'll see you at the finish. And I thought this was kind of like this, like, I guess I kind of came to gravel with a new mindset as well, where like winning wasn't really important. It was just about going and riding hard with my friends. And that's kind of how I felt that at Rule of Three, that first gravel race I did, I was just so like happy to be riding with strong guys and we were off the front and we got to the last single track and I was like, well, I'm not going to call my wife from a hospital in Bentonville, Arkansas to say I hit my head again.
Right.
So I just, you know, I took the single track at my speed and, you know, wound up finishing second, which was great. You know, I was like, wow, I'm still in this. And a couple of weeks later was Unbound. And I kind of went in with the same mindset of like, I have no, you know, there were world tour riders there. There were, you know, all the big gravel names. And I'd never done the event before, kind of fully went in with the intention of like, all right, I just want to like experience this and like have a clean run in it and learn, because I know I'd heard all these, you know, kind of, you know, myths about how technical it is and how rough it is and the aid stations. And yeah, I went there and I don't want to say somehow I won, but I just kept finding myself in the front group. And no, eventually it was just me and Lawrence Tendam, and we came down to a sprint and I was like, holy shit. I'd probably the biggest result I'd ever had in my whole career when you stop kind of trying to have results. And then the rest of the year, I kind of just was, for whatever reason, on this hot streak of, you know, doing well in all these races. And then, you know, 2021, as far as like a racing season, was probably the most enjoyable of my life, because I didn't expect anything. You know, I just was doing it for fun and I kept winning. And, you know, the change that I even saw from last year to this year is immense. You know, I feel like every race I went to this year, there was more pressure, and, you know, gravel racing is more of a, it's people's career now, is where I felt even just last year. You know, I didn't have expectations on myself and no one really expected anything. It was just going to these races and having fun. And, you know, it's quickly become very competitive again.
It looks like the Lifetime Grand Prix kind of changed things a little bit. It made all these races, which were already competitive, even that much more competitive, because it brought people in to these races that weren't quite doing all of them beforehand. So it made the races more exciting. But I tell you, that 2021 race at Unbound was pretty amazing to watch. Nobody knew kind of what Ian could do, or if he, you know, it's a 200-mile race, so it's a long day out there. And the fact, and Ian's he's been known as a climber, not a sprinter, so that it came down to him and Lawrence Tendam in the finish, and he outsprinted him by like a wheel length. It was like half a bike length. It was pretty awesome. But then the following year, 2022, this year, also at Unbound, Ian was in the mix again. It was like a 4 or 5 up sprint, I believe, at the end, and he still ended up on the podium. I think he was third behind Keegan and who was the other Belgian guy?
Ivar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ivar Slick. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, these gravel races, you know, they are more competitive. They are, you know, I still find them fun at a certain point. You know, something like Unbound, the first couple hours is just pure chaos. You know, when you have 4,000 people all trying to fight for position. But once you kind of, the race breaks, and, you know, once we're in that group of 5 riders or 6 riders, that's when I really start to love it. You know, that's when it's like, I just love riding hard with people who are strong, you know, and just like, you really get to test yourself. And, you know, an event like Unbound, you know, I've never done a 10-hour ride outside of those two times I've done Unbound. And like, just the place you get to mentally when you're like completely cooked is such a unique place to be, when you're like, okay, I'm ready to sprint, but if I stand, I might cramp. You know, you don't really know what's going to happen. Yeah. You know, you're like,
I have a question then. Were you at SBT Gravel this year?
I was, yes.
Okay, so I wanted to ask somebody who was actually in that front group really, really what happened, because there was all this drama that came out after SBT Gravel that the front group was really quite large, and some other racers weren't like, there were more racers deep into the race because there really wasn't a selection point or a difficult spot. So there were 50 or 60 riders. This is what I understand. And eventually they were only letting like the top 5 or 6, like hitters actually taking poles. And a lot of other people weren't doing work until Keegan finally got ticked off enough that he yelled some expletive and just bolted from the group. Is that really what happened? What was your experience? Were you in that group as well?
I wasn't. No, this year at SBT, I did something different. I actually rode a e-bike and rode support for the 100-mile ride.
Ah, oh, wow. Well, then forget everything I just said.
No, but I read the stories. I try to avoid the drama of it all.
Yeah.
But it is becoming more of a case of, you know, it's becoming more tactical. I think, you know, a lot of the events I went to in 2021, it was simply, you know, the strongest riders are going to at some point get ahead and they're going to fight it out and the strongest rider wins. And I guess that's what I really fell in love with at these gravel events, was that oftentimes they're so long and challenging that the strongest person is going to win. And there's really no question of, you know, who won the race.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I found. It was very pure in that sense of like, you know, we could all come to the finish and everyone was happy with how they finished. Because if someone beats you and they're just purely stronger than you, you know, that's great. You know, I, at SBT last year, it came down to me, Stetna, and Alex Howes. In 2021, it was a sprint and Alex beat me. And someone's like, oh, you disappointed. I'm like, no, I can't beat Alex in a sprint. Like, the fact that I made it to the finish with a group of three and finished second, that's great. You know, I didn't crash. I didn't have a flat tire. I feel like that was kind of the mindset for most riders, because oftentimes the race, like I said, was dictated by the strongest rider would make a selection and they would win. And everyone was content on that day that they were the strongest rider. But as the stakes have become higher, you know, people will start playing more games tactically, you know, trying to save energy. And, you know, the depth of the field is much deeper than it's ever been. So there's, you know, a handful of riders who are looking at each other and kind of expected to take, you know, big turns. But the person in, you know, 15th, 20th position is equally as strong. They just might not be as known, so they might not be expected to do anything. But at some point, you know, frustrations build when you're taking poles and riding at the front and someone else is just sitting on behind you.
Are you okay with, like, gravel turning into maybe more traditional cycling, like, you know, more tactical, potentially more rules coming involved and maybe more of a governing body? Like, what are your thoughts on that front?
Oh, boy, we're opening a can of worms. Am I okay with
careful,
it?
Careful what you say here.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's kind of an inevitable shift of the sport. You know, we just saw the UCI with the Gravel World Championships, yep. Which is kind of, it's going to happen eventually. I guess what frustrates me, having come from a world of professional road cycling and seen what the positives and the negatives of that are, is that we already have this platform of racing where you have, you know, teams and you have a governing body and you have this very kind of structured system, and it's already in place and they already kind of know how everything works. And the fact that very quickly, you know, both riders and media and, you know, brands have kind of defaulted to what they know. They've defaulted to this, you sure. know, oh, this is what we do at the World Tour, so this is now what we're going to do in gravel racing. And I feel like I'm pretty new to gravel racing in general. You know, I've been doing this for 2 years. You know, there's people like Yuri who, you know, won Unbound back in 2016 or something. You know, he's much more of a, you know, I guess I call him the God or the Gandalf of gravel. You know,
yes.
He's been around, he's seen some things. So it's not my spot to, like, kind of dictate where the sure. sport goes, but yeah. I guess I do have an opinion of having seen the shortcomings of the World Tour and kind of having, you know, a lot of rules and, you know, regulations yeah. in place.
Oh yeah, I think you're
love to try to keep those out. Yeah,
I think your perspective is really unique just because of your background, for sure. I think that it'd be extremely valuable to have you, you know, at least influencing, you know, the direction of the sport. So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my biggest thing is I'm worried that sometimes athletes, and I feel like for the most part, and for the last, you know, I guess 5 years, you know, gravel has been very much an athlete-led discipline where the athletes, yeah. you know, kind of collectively decide on the rules and this, you know, whatever the spirit of it or the, you know, the kind of how the sport works. You know, are we going to stop for water? Are we going to carry hydration packs?
Yeah.
And very quickly, everyone has kind of given that up in the name of winning, which is concerning to me, but
sure.
That's just human nature. And, you know, there are a lot of people, I can come to it from a very different perspective. You know, I had my professional career where that was like my racing career. Now I have a job and a family yeah. and I'm doing this because I love it and I get to do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, for someone like Keegan or Russell, you know, this is their job and like right. they do have, you know, so I can't tell them, hey guys, just take it easy. It's not important, you know, cause it is important. It's sure. their job yeah. and it's their, how they make money and income. And, you know, I'm very aware of kind of both sides of the argument there.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I just can't even fathom. I don't know. It's just, you've got an awesome life, man. It's pretty cool stuff. Get to go ride bikes. You get to work for a big company. You get to live in a cool part of the country. Just out of curiosity, I think I asked you this earlier. I don't know if it connected with you. How close are you to Killington? This is a personal question.
Probably like an hour or 45. It's close to where my wife grew up.
Do you ever get up there?
I have never been skiing there. No, I actually just started skiing 2 years ago. My friend let me borrow his backcountry setup. And I grew up snowboarding and cross-country okay. skiing, and we skied up to the top of Jay Peak. We're close to Burke Mountain is the closest mountain to us.
Gotcha. Do you ever get up into the town, though?
I have been there. Yeah, we're actually probably going to go there for the Women's World Cup on Thanksgiving.
Oh, sweet. Oh, cool. There's a little pizzeria up there called Dominic's. Does that ring a bell by chance?
It does not, but I may check it out in a couple of weeks.
You go in there, tell him Jake said hi. The owner of the restaurant up there is one of my best friends. He was my best man at my wedding, and he and his wife took over that restaurant probably, I don't know, like 15 years ago.
They just decided to open a pizzeria in Vermont.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's a Big life change. Were they from California?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm going to move to Vermont and open the pizza place.
That family there. So it made life a little simpler, but it's a pretty awesome place. Dominic's get in there, make a really mean pizza pie.
Dominic's.
Got some good beverages too. So
okay.
Have at it.
Well, if anyone wants to move to Vermont and open a taco shop, I'd be really happy because there's really a lack of burritos and tacos here.
There's your side hustle right there.
So, yeah. Ian, how are you liking Vermont? I know I feel like you have a fair amount of property and you're kind of out in this. Are you, you know, kind of like out on gravel road?
He's
or
on
road?
Starlink, so he must be out in the sticks, right?
Well, I've seen. So the Wahoo X platform has videos and they kind of like follow you around your property and you're like cutting down trees and stuff like that. It's actually really like I really enjoyed watching that series of videos. But are you still getting out there and taking care of the property? You got a 10-month-old, like life's getting pretty busy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we live in a really rural area where,
right.
you know, several miles down a dirt road. And like I said, we're on Starlink and I mean, I love it. I guess it's, you know, time becomes more valuable. The other day, my brother and I built the lean-to during the pandemic when everything was on lockdown. And the other day I went up there, I'm trying to build a little mountain bike trail on our property here. And the whole roof had blown off the lean-to. And I was like, oh my, there's just always something going wrong. You know, I love New England, but you know, the weather changed, you know, there's not four seasons, there's like eight seasons, which is great. And it probably matches my personality well, because I kind of get bored with things pretty quickly outside of riding my bike. You know, just by the time I'm kind of tired of, you know, splitting wood, well, then the wood stack, you don't need to worry about that for 12 months. But then, you know, the grass starts growing, so you got to mow. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait to start mowing the lawn. And then, you know, sure enough, before too long, you don't mow anymore and you got to start shoveling. So there's always something that's like changing and, you know, coming at you and something else to be done. But it is a harsh climate, you know, with the winters and the hot, humid summers that, it, you know, you're kind of constantly trying to play catch up rather than getting ahead, you know. So as I said, growing up in Bend, Oregon, it's like a town where everyone's just playing 365 days a year. You know, it's high desert, nothing, there's no rust, no mold, nothing goes stale. It's like a pretty easy spot to live. And Vermont is kind of a polar opposite of that.
What was the draw to Vermont because your wife was from that area? What was...
Yeah, I mean, I kind of always wanted to have like a little bit of land and a farm and, you know, be, by no means are we like self-sufficient, but, you know, we have enough apples that we probably don't need to ever buy apples again. So, you know, it was also just much more affordable than Bend, you know, kind of really exploded. You know, the soil's more fertile. You know, we've got a big garden and, you know, we've got 25 chickens. And we've got all sorts of things that kind of were things I always romanticized as a kid that all became possible by, you know, buying a house where we live now.
Oh, I love that.
I want to go check out Vermont. I need to get back there to see my buddy and go check out just the country and the state itself. That sounds awesome.
It's one of like the four states that I have not been to. I have not been to New England.
That's exactly how I am too.
Yeah, I've been to every other state in the country except for Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sweet. So
check it out.
I know.
What are we looking at for 2023? What do you got marked on the calendar? Obviously, Unbound is going to be on there, but... What else you got planned?
Yeah, well, I haven't really told anyone this yet, but looks like I'll be doing Cape Epic in March with Mitch Docker. So,
wait.
Yes.
I thought you didn't know how to ride a mountain bike.
I don't. I don't know how to ride a mountain bike. And that's kind of part of it. Yes, I mean, Unbound, it's kind of as far as like a race to perform at. It's kind of like the, you know, I almost kind of see the season in two parts, you know, like kind of the build up to Unbound and the second part of the year, maybe doing some events that I haven't done before, you know, maybe doing some European stuff and, you know, just seeing some different events. But Cape Epic is in the spring. I currently don't have a mountain bike and I think the trail network up here closes in a week. So I don't know how many times I'll have to ride a mountain bike between now and Cape Epic. I've talked about maybe, I don't know, going down to Bentonville or something in the winter time to practice, because I did borrow a friend's mountain bike the other day and we went for a short ride and I realized that I am very slow on the downhill.
That is very common.
Very extreme.
That's very common. People with high fitness levels and move to off-road racing or get into mountain biking, it takes a while to get comfortable with the descents. It does take some repetitions, some practice.
Many.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. So
d- Do you have any aspirations for Unbound again? I know that people are going to harp on this. That's probably the big one, but that's the one that everybody's been asking us about, and they wanted to know, like, what are you doing differently for this year? Do you think you're going to land on the podium again? And what are you striving for? Obviously, you want to win, but.
I mean, I guess I'd say I don't necessarily want to, like, winning doesn't really, it sounds strange, but winning doesn't really motivate me now, because at this point in my life, like, winning Unbound doesn't change anything. You know, I guess if I was 25 and if I won Unbound, I could get all these sponsors, sure, and it would change my life, and I could quit my job and go back to full-time racing. Like, I don't want that necessarily anymore. Like, I've got a pretty good life set up. I just want to, like, keep it at status quo, which sounds strange, but I guess for me, at a race like that, more than winning, I just want to have, like, a clean run at it. You know, I just, like, you know, this year when I finished third, I was like, cool, you did 99.99% of the race with the front group and you got beat in a sprint. It's like, sweet, I proved to myself that I was still able to, like, ride with the best guys in the, sure, world. And that's, like, enough satisfaction for me. So I guess what I would aim for next year would be the same thing, like, just to be able to prove to myself that I could ride with those guys for the majority of the race. And, you know, if you win the sprint or lose the sprint, like, that's kind of irrelevant. You know, I've done the race twice now. I've had two, you know, pretty clean runs at it. I did have a flat tire this year. But I think just I enjoy, like, the process of getting ready for it and, like, you know, kind of the strategic side of, you know, planning for the event. You know, there's so many little things that, you know, where are your tire plugs and what kind of, you know, what equipment are you going to carry? And there's so many things to think about. I kind of enjoy the process enough that, you know, the outcome is almost irrelevant compared to kind of just having a good, clean run at the event.
Gotcha. That's a healthy approach to bike racing in general, I think, and it just makes it much more pleasurable.
I found it interesting that, previous winners of Unbound have gone through something similar to Ian. Like, Colin Strickland won it on a, you know, 100-mile solo effort, and after that, he was offered a World Tour contract, and he ended up turning it down because he really liked what his life was doing with gravel. Same thing with Keegan. Keegan has been just wiping the map with on almost all these races this year, and he was also offered a World Tour contract, and he also turned it down because he really likes being able to kind of be a privateer, is what they call it, you know, not have to answer to a specific team, but able to do the races he wants to do and whatnot. And Ian's been unique as well. He's one of the best gravel racers in the country, but also decided not to be a part of the Lifetime Grand Prix, even though I'm sure he was offered a spot, or maybe he didn't apply for it. But from what I understand, Ian chose not to do it so that he didn't have to do those six races. Mm-hmm. He could do the races he wanted to do, and if he wanted to go, if he wants to go do Cape Epic, he could go do Cape Epic or something like that. Is that kind of...
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's exactly kind of what happened. You know, I think it was December, January or something, they released this, you know, the Lifetime series. And I heard all this, like, buzz about it. I was like, oh, geez, I better sign up. You know, I gotta get into this. I don't want to miss out. And so I signed up. And I think it was maybe a couple of days before they announced the names of riders who were selected for the series. I actually wrote to Lifetime and said, like, hey, listen, like, I signed up for this. I'd like to be taken out of the series. You know, I'm not against it at all, but I just realized, like, oh, this is going to mean that I'm going to have to race my bike from Sea Otter, which is in April, until, yep, you know, Big Sugar, which was this last week.
Mid-October.
And so I decided that, you know, I've spent the majority of my life, like, doing events and races that I have to go to. And, you know, the whole thing of, you know, I think you had to do 5 of the 6 events. So you could drop one, but I was like, man, what if I get to, like, halfway through the year and I just don't want to go to it? I don't want to also be taking a spot away from some young up and comer that this, yeah, you know, if they win the series or they finish well in the series, it could change their life. Except for me, it's not going to change anything. So I was like, why? I don't need to, like, do a series that, you know, potentially could boost my profile. Rather, I'd go to events that I want to go to, that I enjoy, and, you know, maybe some events that are different. And I think it's a great series. You know, I think it's an awesome opportunity for so many young American cyclists who, you know, there's not the same avenues to the World Tour that were available when I was, you know, 19, 20, 21. You know, so it's giving these new athletes an opportunity to, like, make a living and have a career and to be able to do it their own way, which I think is fantastic. But at this point in my life, I was just like, nah, I don't necessarily want to go to events that, you know, I've never really had on my calendar before. You know, Sea Otter mountain bike race seemed cool, but it's like, I don't need to go do a mountain bike race in Central California.
That's pretty cool. Now, speaking of the young and upcoming kids that are going to make a name for themselves, do you have a list or like a short list of people that you've really got your eye on that you're like, watch out for these guys. They're going to be legit when they get to their station.
Oh goodness. You know, I do follow cycling somewhat close. You know, it's on the roadside. It's really cool to see the young crop of like Americans actually performing well again. I feel like a lot of, you know, especially my generation, there was all these riders like, oh, they're going to be the next, you know, Grand Tour winner. And we all kind of flopped, you know, to see someone like Brandon McNulty or, you know, some of these other riders who, you know, actually are, you know, winning stages and winning races. You know, I know Quinn Simmons and, you know, with Sepp Kuss, like these guys are, I mean, they're not up and coming because they're already in the thick of it and winning big races, which is so cool to see. You know, I feel like for the longest time, there's kind of been like, oh, who's the next American hopeful? And we haven't really met those expectations, but I feel like now there's a whole crop of young riders who actually are, you know, performing at a world stage.
Gotcha. What would you do to kind of change the whole paradigm here in the United States and make cycling more relevant? I mean, it's obviously a massive pastime, but it just seems like we just don't get the infrastructure, the support at the younger levels that we need to be competitive or to really find the cyclist that could be the next best thing. I mean, I always joke that the best cyclist in the world is playing a different sport. I mean, they never went that route because it wasn't an option for them.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, and I think a big thing that I've noticed over the last couple of years is just the lack of funding for development teams. You know, when you look at, like, I guess my era, you know, the USA Cycling had a pretty big, you know, chunk of change to provide for young athletes to go to Europe. You know, I did, goodness, 10 or 15 trips with USA Cycling over to Europe and, you know, kind of got those opportunities to race internationally. And for the last 3 years, there's been no real national team. They've maybe done the World Championships and maybe, you know, the Tour de l'Avenir, but they don't have the same support that they had, you know, to get young riders just over to Europe and racing. And, you know, you take over 60 kids, maybe three of them or four of them will kind of make it to the next level. And that's kind of all disappeared. At the same time, you know, there's been this boom of kind of these mixed surface races, you know, gravel, mountain bike. But there, one thing I have noticed that's kind of shocking is there's really no emphasis on young rider. You know, Unbound is too long of a race for a 16-year-old kid to do. You can't have a 16-year-old kid do 200 miles. So while we have this new kind of unique platform of racing, it's not really, you know, it's not really accommodating to developing young riders. It's kind of tends to be more older riders who have maybe already had a career or came from something else into this space. So it's a tricky time for young American cyclists to kind of crack into, you know, making a career out of professional cycling, whether it's mountain bike or road. I know that USA Cycling is kind of actively trying to find a way to, you know, get more funding to actually be able to send riders over to Europe. But at the same time, it just becomes so difficult on the road to host and organize races just because the, you know, difficulty of getting road closures and, you know, getting enough participation at the events, which is kind of why gravel has exploded. But then on the gravel side, like I said, there's just not the same level of access for junior riders to do a lot of the marquee races.
So just a shorter option then would maybe open up the door for that. But that's just a whole nother, like whole nother set of like people and, you know, trying to make sure that it's properly sanctioned. And there's just, it's a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah, I think Quinn Simmons had kind of difficulty, you know, initially because he, you know, he's from Durango, Colorado, and he came from kind of an off-road background. But Durango has such a great young development, like, squad that he was able to get most of his development just through the city of Durango and their development squad instead of being with USA Cycling. And then as an 18-year-old, he goes to Leadville and takes third overall, and then he's on the map. And then, you know, then USA Cycling kind of jumped in with Quinn Simmons. I think that's kind of how it went.
Yeah, and there's kind of, I mean, that's kind of the story of a lot of riders who have made it. They've kind of, you know, done a lot themselves. To, you know, I grew up in Oregon where we weren't even part of USA Cycling. You know, I had a 5511 on my time trial bike when I was 14 years old because Obra didn't have any junior gear restrictions. You know, then I went to Nationals. I was like, what the heck? I have to ride a 5214. This is stupid. you know, so, I mean, and I know there's like this huge like movement now in the U.S. for crit racing and, you know, and to trying to, you know, start this crit league, which potentially could be like a uniquely similar to gravel, like an American way to get riders on bikes. You know, the reality of that though is that the US is kind of the pinnacle of crit racing. You know, the Europe already has Tour Flanders and Roubaix and the Tour de France and Tour de France Femme. they're not going to all of a sudden start a crit league. It just, you know, it's not part of their cycling history. It is here in the U.S. You know, so if one of these cycling crit leagues can actually take off and become like, you know, a viable career option for young riders, you know, it's very accessible as far as, you know, it's much, you could do all the races here within the U.S. You can have a whole circuit, you can have a team, you can, you know, kind of drive around the country rather than flying across the world. So it is something that'll be interesting to see. You know, one thing I just realized, you know, a couple of months ago is that, like, you know, for the longest time, American cycling, road cycling tried to follow the European model, like, oh, the Tour de France works in France, let's start a Tour of California. You know, I had the, you know, fortune of doing numerous Tour of Californias, but over the years, I just saw it gradually kind of get smaller and smaller because they go to the same cities and you're drawing the cycling fans to come out and watch. But, you know, the fifth time the race goes to San Jose, it's not a novelty for the general public anymore to go see the race again. So they stop showing up. So the race slowly kind of, yeah. You know, yeah, so it fades away. But maybe, you know, having a, you know, a crit in San Jose once a year on a Friday night will draw that crowd because it's got this different atmosphere than something like the Tour of California that finishes on a Tuesday at 3 p.m. or something.
Gotcha. Any other questions for Ian before we kind of change gears here?
No, let's go to Wahoo stuff.
Yeah. Got some Wahoo questions for you. Ready for these?
Hit me.
Do you guys have anything that you want to start with before I just kind of start reading down the list of questions that folks have asked us to ask Ian?
Sure. I'm cool with whatever.
Good with ever. All right. So first and foremost, what head unit are you running? Just out of curiosity.
Most of this year I was on the new Bolt.
V2.
Which, you know, is the smaller of the two bike computers, just because it was Same. The newest one and the map features were so much better. But, you know, a couple of weeks ago we launched the new Roam. Uh-huh. And so now I'm on the Roam because essentially it's, you know, I've got more screen, more pages more data fields on the page to be able to see with all the same, you know, features that the new Bolt had.
Now, that's a good question. The guys always make fun of me for having all of the data on my main screen. I think I maximized that out.
You got 12 screens up. I can't even read your screen.
That's an eye problem.
It's an old man problem is what it is.
How many data points are you generally running on your primary screen?
You know, if I'm in events, most of these gravel events are on their self-navigation. So you have to have a bike computer that you can, you know, upload a GPX file. And so on my map page, which is the main page I run, and, you know, now with the new Bolt and Roam, you know, you can see the elevation profile as well with the map. And on my Bolt at the top, I literally just have time of the event. I have my current speed, average speed, and distance. And for most events, that's really all I need to see. That's what I look at probably 95% of the time is that page. You know, on my other pages, you know, I have a climbing page. I have like a kind of a route or ride summary page, you know, has like TSS and max, you know, the nerdy, you know, data points, you know, max speed, max power, you know, all these kind of, you know, left, right balance, which is kind of almost like my review page. And, you know, I have like an interval page if I'm doing, you know, an interval. And I guess the page I probably use the second most after my mapping page is the Strava live segments. You know, a lot of my training involves going after my KOMs to compare myself to myself. So,
yes.
So are you not running power on your primary screen? You're not looking at the power numbers?
I will for intervals, but in races, I'm not looking at power at all.
Really?
No. No. And it's something that actually you mentioned Colin Strickland earlier that and it's kind of dictate a lot of my training for gravel events. You know, he said, hey, a lot of these events, the winning speed is 20 miles an hour. And so, you know, for the longest time in the World Tour, I was only looking at my power numbers. You know, every interval was power specific and, you know, do this many watts for this many minutes. And a lot of my big training rides for, you know, getting ready for Unbound, I'll map out a 100-mile loop. Even though I know the roads, I'll map it out so I can kind of practice, you know, with the navigation and kind of real race scenario. And I'll just say, okay, here's a 100-mile loop. I'm just going to average 20 miles an hour. And it's really taught me a lot about like pacing. You know, you think when you're doing intervals, like you tend to do them mostly on the uphill because it's easier to produce the power, but you're not getting the speed. And so it's taught me a lot about like momentum and just like how to ride faster rather than harder. You know, you can have a much higher average power and ride slower if you're not efficient, but learning like, okay, like where do you apply power? When can you coast? It sounds strange, but a lot of the big rides I do, I'm just trying to like maintain, you know, in the early spring, I get to 70 miles and I blow up and I crawl home at 13 miles an hour. But I just try to like, how long can I hold 20 miles an hour for? Cause it's pretty hilly around here as well. So I've kind of used that as my my gauge of, and that's why, you know, I have an average speed metric on my head unit, just so I can see that when I'm in training, you know, how fast am I going and what's, you know, what's the average of it as well, because you might, you know, might drop on a climb, but equally, if you can ride steady and kind of power over the top, you'll pick back up speed pretty quickly.
Interesting approach.
Yeah. So with your new Rome version 2, how are you excited about the upcoming summit segments, you know, the similar to a Climb Pro type feature that I think that they're currently in the development of? I can't remember if they've quite released it yet, but I think it's coming out very shortly. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is coming shortly. You know, it's funny because I live in an area where I know most all of the roads that I ride.
Yeah.
But I still will upload a GPX file for rides that I know. And I don't really know why. Maybe it's because if I, you know, sometimes I'm crunched for time, and, or sometimes you go out for a ride and you don't feel great. And I'm planning to do a 60-mile ride, but I know, cool, if I turn here, I can get back in 40 miles. And so maybe it's like holding myself accountable. If I, you know, if I do happen to cut short, you know, it's going to try to reroute me, and then I feel guilty. So I'm like, okay, I should get back on the route that I was supposed to do. So even now, I'll make GPS or GPX files for rides that I already know, probably just to keep myself accountable for, you know, following through with what I intended to do when I set out. Which, you know, if you do upload a GPX file, it will give you the route profile and kind of the, you know, the color gradient of the climbs coming up.
Gotcha. Do you get to ride any beta firmware? Like any, like getting any sneak peeks that we maybe get some info from you?
I have in the past, you know, but to be completely honest, I had them take me off of that. Yeah. Just because, you know, I was using my units for races, and, you know, obviously beta is beta for a reason. You know, some things are still in testing, and the last thing I want at, you know, a big event is for, you know, a feature like, oh yeah, we knew about this bug that was in the system. So I've just gone to, like, with the tech team, I've just gone with my current Bolt and Rome, just to, like, I just want to be on the final phase of firmware and software, just because, you know, I want it to work like it does for everyone else. So I know that it's, you know, been tested and tried.
Yeah. Well, one of the big gripes that a lot of people have given us, and we deal with people all the time that are constantly going back and forth on which head unit is going to be better. Is it going to be Garmin? Is it going to be Wahoo? And there's a fair amount of people that are starting to talk about the Hammerhead now too. But one of the big things is that Summit feature not being on there yet. And it wasn't a thing for a long time, and people always wanted the Climb Pro. They're like, why isn't Climb Pro on the Wahoo stuff yet? Do you know much about the Summit? Have you used that? Do you know how it's going to compare and contrast to the Climb Pro on Garmin?
To be honest, I don't. It's one of those things, like I said, I've seen how it works, and I know kind of what it looks like. Oftentimes, a lot of the climbs around here I have on Strava live segments anyway, so like when I hit that climb, it pops up and I kind of know how far I have to go to the top and, you know, what my estimated time is. So it'll look fairly similar to if you've used that feature on the Wahoo, you know, the Strava live segments, it'll look fairly similar to that, where you, you know, I guess essentially counting down the, you know, whether you're in kilometers or miles to the top and giving you a projected time.
Now, what about the feature on the Hammerhead units? I can't remember. Matt might know the name of it, but it's where it basically auto-detects climber. The climber.
Yeah.
Is it Climber?
It's just called Climber,
It's auto-detecting the climbs, and it's basically giving you that information without having to upload any kind of a file or any kind of, like, live segments. Is there possibility that could be coming in that Summit feature?
Yes, that's what it'll be. You don't have to upload a file for it to generate what's coming up.
Excellent.
You know, similar to what you have now with a GPX file, a GPS unit knows where you're at and can detect which road you're on and what the climb looks like.
Gotcha. That's exciting. That's gonna make a lot of people happy.
Yeah. My two biggest gripes with the Wahoo computers, which I use for almost exclusively now, were the fact that it didn't have a climbing feature where it could tell you really how long the climbs were. And the other one was that there wasn't a Trail Forks integration.
That's the other one. That's the other biggie.
That where, like with Garmin, if you're riding off-road, more mountain biking than anything, if you're mountain biking with a Garmin, you can actually see the names of the trails on the map page as you're going. And I'm really hoping that Wahoo will integrate that at some point. Is there any noise about that?
Well, as we've discussed, I don't have a mountain bike at the moment. So it's something feedback I haven't brought to the table yet. But as I hopefully get ready for Cape Epic, it's something that I may encounter. And I'm, you know, our development team is always kind of working on new stuff, and they have so many, you know, things that come in as far as like new development features that I'm sure that's on their list somewhere, but I'm not entirely sure of when it's coming.
And do you have any interest in the blood glucose feature? I know that that's probably a small item on a lot of people's menu, but for some, you know, professional athletes, I think that they're looking at these continuous glucose monitors and having a stream actually to Wahoo units. And I think Wahoo now supports that on I think that's going to be like on all of their devices. So,
yeah, that just launched, you know, and Bobby Julek, who, you know, is a former pro cyclist, works for Super Sapiens now. And, you know, he sent me up a couple units last year and I had it on, for a while, but it was just at this, like I said, kind of the theme of my life. It was just too much.
Yep.
You know, I felt too much like a pro cyclist again. I'm like, I just want to eat ice cream. I don't care what this thing shows me.
It's going to spike your glucose. Why would you eat ice
cream? And I understand, like, I mean, if I was, like I said, 21 again, I'd be like, I'd be all over this. I'd be using it daily. I'd be, you know, but Bobby mentioned that, you know, you kind of need like a, you know, at least 6 months of like continuing to figure out like what is unique about your body and foods that work with you and don't work with you. And it's fascinating stuff, but it was just a little bit too much for me at this point in my life.
Yeah. That's very understandable.
Is the concept behind that, like, if you have glucose monitoring while you're training, you'll see I am low and need to take in calories.
You'll see your glucose numbers on your Wahoo head unit. It's like, that's the piece that Wahoo added. And so, so continuous glucose monitors, for people that don't know, it typically was used for diabetics that would have, you know, extremely low or extremely high blood glucose. And so, they would know, go eat a candy bar or whatever it is. Instead of pricking your finger, you just have this piece in the back of your, you know,
Dexcom.
Thick of the
look at that's
the
beefy
triceps right
there's,
there.
There's nothing but love right there.
So Dexcom is a very popular brand, but there are other brands, and there's a company that Ian mentioned, Super Sapiens, that's doing it more specifically targeted towards athletes. So just like, you know, anything else, your body runs on sugar and glucose, and so if you can monitor that
and
particular
Susie Jam,
value,
it runs
and Susie
on
Jam,
Susie Jam.
You gotta run. Yeah, well, if you get enough Susie Jam in your system, you can do Unbound, basically. And that's what the Wahoo unit will show you.
That's cool.
Yep.
Yeah, man, I think it's revolutionized sports nutrition. I mean, and the fact that you can now see it live riding. It's funny that the UCI has banned it in competition because I think they assume it's going to be too beneficial. Because, I mean, it really is. If you can learn, like, when you're about to, you know, we don't see people bonk anymore. You don't see, you know, stage 19 of a tour, you know, Pogacar, you know, cracks and loses 45 minutes. That just doesn't happen anymore. You know, because these riders, their nutrition is so dialed.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've learned that, you know, different athletes also fuel differently. You know, back in, even when I was at, you know, Team Sky, we oftentimes had, you know, one meal for the whole team and everyone ate pasta or everyone ate rice or chicken, whatever it was. And now they're finding different bodies work differently with different fuel sources. So with, you know, with these glucose monitors, you're able to see what works for you, but also just seeing it live on your head unit, you're able to kind of predict like, oh, I'm heading towards a bonk,
right?
And you can kind of, you know, preemptively eat to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah,
fantastic.
My body runs on Haribo. Yeah,
is that the gummy?
Yeah, that's gummy. Hey, it's gummy candy.
If it works.
What about crash detection? We have that on the Garmin head units. What about Wahoo? Do you think that will ever be something that they will introduce?
You know, this was actually funny because I was thinking about this the other day. I think I had it on my head unit for a while, and maybe when I was on beta, I did have that. I need to follow up with that because it was something that I remember several times. You know, I dropped my bike, and you know, the crash detection came up.
Okay, it's not on there to the best of my knowledge. Am I incorrect on that, Matt? Do you know if it is or isn't?
It's, you know, I think all of these companies are experimenting with a lot of stuff,
sure.
You know, and so I'm sure that it was in a beta piece that never made it out to production.
Gotcha.
So, you know, who knows?
And the only reason why I ask is because my wife asked me about that. She's like, you used to have that on your old Garmin thing.
And it goes off all the time randomly. And she freaks out, has a heart attack because she thinks you're in a crash and you're dead in a ditch somewhere.
We've all had our incidents.
Well, okay, so your radar unit, Jake, that you use actually does have...
It does now, but it just it doesn't like send a signal. It just locks the actual image or the, whatchamacallit, the video file. So,
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So we've got a very active phone down here right now. Everybody's trying to get hold of us. Yeah, we don't open for another hour, folks. Stop calling.
Turn it off.
Do you guys have any other questions for him with respect to Wahoo before I jump into a few more?
Let's roll.
Yeah, whatever. Go ahead. Anything you want.
Just keep going, huh? Okay, so the next one, I'm going to just go back up here to David Goodman asked way back when. He wants to know what Wahoo feels the industry will look like in 10 years. That's a very broad, open question, but do you see anything kind of crazy on the horizon that's like, oh my gosh, once this comes around, it's going to be industry changing, or do you think it's just going to be small perfections being made to things that we're already used to?
I mean, I think the biggest, I mean, there are constantly things that are changing. You know, we just mentioned, you know, the blood glucose monitoring, you know, I'm sure it before too long, there'll be kind of live, you know, lactate measurement readings.
Right.
I think the thing that'll change the most, and I think, you know, even within Wahoo, is kind of like smart training plans that kind of auto, you know, we're capturing all this information currently. You know, you have your blood glucose, you have your sleep score, you have all these things that are feeding back into an algorithm, but they're not really talking to each other. You know, every system you're using, you know, whether it's your training stress, your blood glucose, your sleep, they're all independent scores, but they're not kind of talking to each other to say, hey, here's how your body's responding to what you're eating, how you're sleeping, your training. So I think that's in, you know, 5-10 years time, I think we'll have this ability to like harness all this kind of feedback from our bodies, and it'll be pumped into a training program that can then, you know, essentially be auto generated to get you ready for your event based off of all these different parameters that we can measure. You know, I think that's the biggest thing now with, you know, a lot of people who use a training plan, you know, you sign up for a training plan, but something goes wrong, you get sick or you miss a day because you're stressed. And then it kind of throws off the whole training plans out of whack because you just happened to miss one day or one day you got sick. So kind of like auto adjusting training plans based off of human feedback, well, I think will be a huge step forward in the next decade.
Trainer Road does have that AI adjusted training program.
It's new. Is it still
in beta?
It's not in beta anymore. It's actually been rolled out to everybody, but it's still a little buggy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it works really well with the trainer rides, but your outdoor efforts don't quite. And you know, they don't really feed into the system very well.
I think
they're working on that.
Ian's point was like, once you start collecting all of that data, like your sleep score and all this stuff, like it's just, you know, so much data. And that's exactly what those AI systems are good at processing, right? It's computer learning algorithms. So it's just like, give me more data and I'll do a better job of predicting a good training program for you.
And if you know, okay, my goal event for the year is Unbound, and it's a 200-mile race, and for me it's going to be a 15-hour effort or a 14-hour effort, we're hoping we get to the point where, okay, your endurance levels are good enough, but you need more sweet spot training, or you need more sweet spot work, or you need...
Trainer Row would definitely be sweet spot.
It would be. or you need... Or you need some threshold work so that you can stay with the group at those, you know, critical junctures. I mean, it sounds like, Ian, we hope that we're getting to that kind of level of AI.
I think that stuff takes a long time to develop as a developer, just because you have to feed it so much data, and then you have to evaluate it and then start over.
And what's the training philosophy? I mean, there's like four different training philosophies.
Well, the idea with the machine learning stuff is that it would figure it out. There's no training philosophy. It's like not understood. Ian, do you have a coach? I'm just curious. We didn't ask you that when we were talking about your training.
No, I don't. I don't anymore. You know, I've had numerous coaches throughout my career, and like as you said, they all have different philosophies. You know, I had an American coach, and I worked with Hunter Allen for a while, and there was a lot of sweet spot training. Then I worked with an Italian coach, and it was all big gear, you know, low RPM training. It's like everyone has a different philosophy. You know, I mean, I feel like a lot of times coaches were cyclists, and hey, this worked for me, so this is what I'm going to give my athletes. And that's where I think AI can actually come in, and you know, because you and I can be on the same training program and maybe have similar physiology, and one of us excels and one of us deteriorates, you know? So I think that's like the thing that, you know, I think also the hardest thing with anyone who's training is like being honest with your coach or with, you know, with a program, like where you could plug in like, hey, I actually felt horrible today and I'm not being, you know, sometimes you wouldn't necessarily be honest with your coach because you want to go out and go for a ride with your buddies the next day. And hopefully in time, you know, AI will be able to kind of pick up on that and be like, hey, actually you should take a rest day. You know, and I think in time it'll kind of come and it'll be perfected. But as you said, we have access to so much data at this point. It's like, I sometimes feel like we have a hard time actually utilizing all the information that's coming, that we're being fed, to actually give us something that's useful. And, you know, whether it's a day score where it kind of gives you all this information rather than, you know, your sleep monitor is telling you this and your training plan is telling you that. And like, they don't always sync up together. And I think that's where the biggest changes will come. And yeah, I'm not a tech person, so I don't really know how all that works, but I'm sure there are smarter minds than I working on it.
Gotcha. All right. Next question comes from Sarah Gates. We all know Sarah Gates. She's great. She wants to know, she seems to think that there's a dead spot, satellite dead spot here in Southwest Washington. And she wants to know, is that a thing? Are there like legitimate dead spots where your computer's just not going to work the way that it should?
Like she's probably missing, like not picking up GPS or it's not tracking properly. It's
something to that effect. Like she's getting like the straight lines and she says it's always in the same spot where it either goes on auto pause or it just gives her straight lines or it's not picking up data. It's not giving her the directions it's supposed to. She swears that there's an area here in Southwest Washington.
Did she describe it at all? Because there's no spot that GPS satellites don't cover. Yeah. It's just the fact that there's interference with things like trees, or usually it's more things like tall buildings or...
She's very savvy. She understands all of these things quite well. And she says that she knows that trees and buildings and things like that will play a factor. She says that she's in certain areas where it's open. It should have access. She's just having all kinds of issues. Now, we did determine, and I don't know if you know that this is a thing or not, there's, you know, people that like to take action cameras out there, and, you know, more times than not, it's a GoPro, but there's a few people, myself included, that will play with the Insta360 1X2 camera, which is a fun little camera, and sometimes you put that out in front of your bike, it gives you a really cool perspective and get some cool little videos, but we've come to find if you put that camera underneath a Wahoo head unit, it will completely make all of the GPS go completely bonkers. It will... mess up your live segments. It'll mess up your GPS routing. It will sometimes even pause it, and it just does not want to run with that camera out there. You take the camera out from underneath it, and you put it behind on the seat rails if you have a mount back there. Problem solved.
So, like radio interference, just like general. It has basic
to be. It has to be something. Yeah, and you don't. And that the camera's not even connected to your phone. It's just running. It's filming, but whatever it's emitting is causing the head unit to go bonkers.
Yeah.
So.
That is possible. I guess my advice would be to make sure, you know, some people get really in this, and if you're in the same spot, the Wahoo, like if you're starting your ride from the same area and you have it saved as a favorite, like it kind of auto detects, are you in this location?
Yeah.
So I would say just make sure once you turn your Wahoo on and actually like wait a few, like, you know, wait 30, 40 seconds to make sure you've acquired GPS. Because sometimes people get in the habit of riding and if you start with a poor signal, sometimes it'll kind of stay on a poor signal the entire ride, you know, so that could be a problem. It is interesting you say that because there's an area around me where there's like a power, like a hydro dam, and this one section of road, it's like maybe a quarter mile. And every time my speed like stays the same, even though I'll change speed, you know, it's where all the wires run across the road, all the, you know, power lines. And I, like I said, I don't know the inner workings of GPS, but maybe, you know, something where the power lines are somehow interfering with some type of signal for this quarter mile section of road.
Gotcha. That sounds possible.
Yeah, very, very well could be. Another question here. People are asking, and there's part of this question I'm sure you're not going to be able to answer because it's going to be Garmin related, but it can go both ways. There are a lot of people that will use like a Wahoo head unit, but they're going to be wearing a Garmin watch because that watch works well for them. They want to know, will the two entities ever allow the data from each other's devices to be uploaded to their...
No.
That's my assumption there. But, you know, if you're a Garmin watch wearer, then it's going to go up to Garmin Connect. And if you're using the Wahoo Element, it's going to go up to that app, and you're not going to ever be able to like
merge
those data points without going to a third platform that will take that all in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that I think that we are trying to, and should be working on, you know, especially as kind of Wahoo X expands, you know, which is, you know, now oftentimes people are putting their rides, you know, especially if they're doing training, they're either putting it to, you know, Training Peaks or Today's Plan or, you know, Strava. You know, as we kind of build out System X, you know, to be able to upload from different devices. You know, one thing that I do now is, you know, I use my heart rate on my watch instead of wearing a heart rate strap more often than not. And, you know, so that heart rate will tether to your bike computer. You know, it'll pick up like any other sensor, you know, to broadcast that heart rate.
Gotcha. Another question. We've got people that love the fact, myself included, in the very beginning, I didn't think I was going to like the fact that I had to set up the head unit on the phone. until I actually did it for the first time. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so much easier than doing it on Garmin. It's a thing of beauty. But not all the time do I want to take my phone with me. And that's what some other people have said. And sometimes you might want to change a data field. Is that something that they will ever work into the system so that you can actually change some of your data fields or set up the pages a little bit differently through the head unit only if I don't have a phone with me?
How do you take selfies writing of yourself if you don't have your phone with you?
My GoPro.
That's true. Yeah. Most likely not in the immediate future. You know, I think that's just because, you know, we've found, you know, anytime you have a touchscreen, I'm not sure if either of you or three of you are big sweaters, but, you know, I was on a Garmin at one point at Team Sky. And, you know, one thing that I found is, you know, a touchscreen is, you know, convenient at times. It's also horrible at other times. You know, if it's raining, you're trying to swipe the water off, and like next thing you know, you're in settings and you can't get back. And, you know, the convenience of being able to update things through your phone. I think that's, you know, oftentimes why the developers have added so many pages to the bike computer, you know, because, I mean, honestly, you can carry more data fields on your bike computer than you probably ever realistically need to see. So I would suggest if that is an issue for you, have a, you know, a third page or, you know, an eighth page that essentially just holds data that you most likely never want to see, but once in a while you do actually want to see.
Gotcha. People are asking, will Wahoo ever have the Garmin Light Network be a thing on the Wahoo platform? I know that the radar works.
You mean
lights or?
The actual light network. So you know how it connects with the UT800 and the radar, and then you can kind of adjust based on the time of day, and it just kind of integrates the whole light network into the user experience. Is that something? It might very well be a thing now. It might have changed since this list was generated. I don't use that to know one way or another, but I figured I'd ask because people are asking.
You know, I'm not super familiar with the lights. I do have a buddy who is on a Wahoo bike computer who came over from Garmin and, you know, has the Garmin. I don't even know the name of the light.
Varia radar, like, hey, probably. Or, oh, yes, you mean the 800. Or the 800. Yeah, yeah. There's different lights.
Yeah, the big one. The big one. The dad light. Yes, but I mean, so he actually does, you know, and he can see, so on the side of the Wahoo bike computers, you know, you have the LED lights. You know, so those will illuminate based off the speed that the car is kind of coming up behind you. And so I guess I'm not completely familiar with, like, what this question actually is. Like, can you change, I guess, the dim or the brightness of the light if it's dark, or, you know, if you're riding in the middle of the day, maybe you want it brighter. If it's at night, maybe you can dim it down because the light's gonna, you know, travel further if it's dark outside.
Gotcha.
That's exactly the way that 800 works. If it connects to your Garmin head unit, it like
adjusting,
it like turns off when you stop. Like if you stop at a stoplight, it dims way down, and as you get going again, it turns back up. And the idea is to save battery, you know, time.
I think a lot of this is, like, it's up to the manufacturer, whether it's a, you know, Wahoo or Garmin or some other third-party company that's making a radar. They have to provide open protocols for the software developers at, you know, Wahoo or wherever to implement. And so sometimes, like in the case of the radar, where it's like these cars are coming at you or whatever, you know, and the radar can pick that up and display it on any head unit, it's because they're operating based on a specific protocol that everyone agrees on. So everyone agrees on this protocol. Then whatever radar they're using, as long as they're following the protocol, then any of the companies that have head units can use that protocol.
Gotcha.
So I think it's the key is, you know, it's just like what parts of these features of the radar units or the, you know, bike lights themselves, are they following a protocol? Because if not, like, you know, there's no way for Wahoo to implement anything like that.
Now, the radars.
Yeah, the open source. Yep.
Yeah.
Radars are wildly popular. We sell a ton of those things, and for good reason. I think that they're a fantastic device. Do you think that that's something that Wahoo will ever want to dip their toes in as another option, as an accessory?
I know they have looked into it. You know, I think it's something that's been talked about, that's been explored, that, you know, has even probably come into, like, you know, some pretty serious discussions. You know, at the same time, you know, compared to a company like Garmin, you know, we're, like, really focused on, like, how can we make the best products, and is our time and energy better spent, you know, elsewhere rather than kind of diving into a whole new field of, you know, development at this time. I know there's people in the company that want it to happen.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, it's like, hey, you know, if someone else is already making something that works, but we can work it with our current system, it's like, you know, don't try to fight it.
Nice way to diversify.
It's interesting because that particular piece hasn't changed that much, right? Like, it's like, I mean, yeah, there's a camera on it now, but, like, basics, you know, radar comes back, you can detect traffic.
Yep.
Like, and then I find, you know, what patents does Garmin own in that realm?
That's a good question. And now, you're reviewing another unit, and there's other manufacturers that are starting to make them. So you would think that you don't want to miss that boat.
Well, yes and no. I mean, so Wahoo is based in Atlanta, Georgia.
Sure.
In the United States, where we are very strict about patent laws and the rules, and Wahoo's not going to, like, just, you know, blatantly break a patent and, like, just do something. Whereas there are other companies that will do that, and maybe they get sued out of existence and maybe they don't. But, like, right now I think that there are two other companies besides Garmin that are making or starting to make radar units. And I have one, and I'll be reviewing it on my channel or whatever. But Wahoo would maybe be a little bit more careful about that, I would expect.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see. I mean, the patent law is very tricky, and it's not a spot that I'm an expert in. So,
gotcha. There are a bunch of other questions here, but I think it's kind of getting into the weeds a little bit. But I did have a question for you. Is there something that you would like to see brought to the Wahoo Element platform that they're not currently offering that, like, would be game changing for you?
Yes, there is, and it is coming, actually. Which is great. And that's device to device sharing. You know, because one of these things that the questions that I always get, you know, because oftentimes if we're at events, I'm in the expo.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I will, you know, if I'm going to a race, I'm going to Unbound or SBT, I'll upload the GPX file to my bike computer before I go because I have Wi-Fi at my house. The bike computer is already connected to Wi-Fi. But most people, you know, they get to the race and we're in a parking lot somewhere, and they come up to me and they say, yep. Hey, how do I get the ride onto my bike computer? And they don't have service because we're, you know, somewhere random. And it's, you know, it makes it difficult to actually get the GPX file onto your computer. So one thing that is coming with the new Roam is, like, device to device sharing, which, I mean, for me is, like, working in an expo is phenomenal. You know, you can broadcast the GPX route, and anyone with a Wahoo can turn it on and they can press accept. And, you know, the GPX file will, you know, populate onto their bike computer. And it's the same thing, you know, how many times do you show up for a group ride with a bunch of friends? You know, we have a local group ride here in Vermont that we started during the pandemic, and we meet on Tuesday nights, and usually we do the same ride, but once in a while we don't. And, you know, if we do a different route, and, you know, the people are riding at different speeds, people don't really know where they're going if we're all going to do a different route. But I could say, hey, here's the route for tonight. Everyone, you know, put your bike computer out. I can send it to everyone instantly from a parking lot in the middle of nowhere, and we'll all have the ride file for that night, which for me seems like, you know, a huge game changer.
I love that. I know. That is brilliant.
It's a great feature.
Will that work on the Bolt V2 as well, or is it going to be just for the Roam?
I think it's going to work.
I think it will be coming on the Bolt as well. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Super cool. I would love it if it was, again, open protocol of some sort, and so that if Garmin so choose, or other companies, Brighton or whatever other head units, Hammerhead,
share
or whatever,
it with any,
that'd be a nice thing to do. We'll see. And I don't even, we'd have to look at, like, the technology that they're using to transfer files and stuff like that, but
gotcha.
Know, be interesting.
Cool. We talked a lot about head units. I want to get into the Wahoo X RGT thing real quick, because I definitely think that deserves some discussion here, and I wanted to get Ian's take on that. What's new? What's coming up with that? I know that they're really pushing hard. It was fantastic to see them kind of bring RGT under their wing and make that a part of the whole Wahoo X platform. There's a bunch of reasons why I like that. What are some things that we can expect to see there?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one thing that we just launched with the new Roam and with the kind of most recent launch of System X was, like, you know, you can now do system workouts outside. You know, you can now put them onto your bike computer and do those workouts outside, where traditionally you could just do them inside. You know, one thing that I'm working on with a lot of our teams and athletes is, you know, an increased number of, like, events on RGT, which is, you know, a platform that I've had rarely used. You know, if I ride inside, I almost always use System. If I'm riding inside, I usually want to ride by myself. I want to be efficient. I want to get it done. I'm not going to spend 3 hours on, you know, an island riding around with random people. But, you know, so one thing that I have been doing more of is actually exploring the RGT platform, which is, you know, really cool, because with the Magic Roads feature, you know, you can upload a GPX file from an upcoming race or a ride you've already done, and you can actually simulate that ride at home, which is great. You know, I can actually, you know, kind of preview a course without actually having to, you know, go fly out somewhere and see the course ahead of time. Which is, you know, great for me, and, you know, just getting more athletes to, you know,
going back to the Magic Road. the magic road thing, what can we expect from that? Matt will tell me all day long that it's near impossible or it's way too much computing and all this other stuff. It would be fantastic if they could somehow integrate that with Google Maps and all of a sudden you can actually see the roads. That'd be fantastic. I know that that's a huge undertaking, maybe a decade from now, but is there anything in the magic road realm that they're going to do to maybe help you change the look of it a little bit? Or is that just too much, too heavy, too much programming?
I mean, it's being worked on, but that is a huge process. You know, I think just the computing power to generate buildings and trees,
sure,
and, you know, cars and all that it's a lot. It would be cool, you know, if you could go do a, you know, sweet ride through downtown New York City or something and, you know, actually have traffic out there and all that. But for the moment, you know, it is a lot of computing power to actually make that happen.
Gotcha. Yeah, we do a weekly ride on Tuesdays, and we've been doing this for 5 or 6 years, and I think this is year 6, and it's always been on Zwift, just because that was the prevailing platform, and we kind of dabbled with RGT a little bit last year and kind of played with it to see if it would be something that would work, and then when it came under Wahoo, I'm like, okay, this is something we're going to have to check out, because then they're going to put some money behind that. And we've since brought it over with our team, or not our team, but the groups that are doing this training ride. We've brought everybody over to RGT to try that out for a bunch of different reasons. The Magic Roads is fantastic. I like the fact that somebody can still go on there and use RGT and use it for free, which lowers the barrier of entry for folks. And if we invite them to one of our rides, they can be on the ride with us and still not have to pay. And, you know, for some people, like, you know, the 15, 16, 17 bucks a month, whatever it works out to, that can be still a bit of much, but too much for them to have to pay for. So they can still come and participate with us. And it just seems like it's a good platform because the ride feels a little bit more realistic. You don't have it all gamified with all kinds of power-ups and, you know, barreling around a corner at 50 miles an hour that's a tight hairpin corner. I mean, it's just a little bit more realistic. So for us, that's fantastic. And being able to put training routes in there that we want to use for, you know, simulating a race that's coming up, that's fantastic. And I love this, but the magic road that we uploaded the first time, it was fun because you could see the route on the course, but like it's just like the same thing. So it's not much to look at. It doesn't really compare to the likes of Zwift. So that part of it, you know, is a little bit boring, but you can still ride with people. And I think it's got a lot of upside, and it'd be fantastic to see some of the, you know, the customization come out if that ever ends up being a thing, or if you can at least kind of like say, all right, it's in this general part of the country. Maybe it should look kind of like this. It doesn't have to be perfect, but
yeah.
Brand new feature.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that will.
Oh, go ahead, Ian.
Oh, go ahead. Well, yeah, I think that's one thing that will come is just more worlds and more roads and more locations, you know, as we kind of build out the platform.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting. One new feature just released this week on RGT is very interesting, in particular for kind of like our little like group ride.
Yeah.
Is
push to talk?
Voiceover. Yeah. IT. Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of, it removes the need for like something like Discord or a third party like communication platform.
Yeah,
that way.
It's that part's good, but the fact that you still have to take your hands off the bar, hold the button down to talk, and then come back. That's it'd be kind of nice if you could just leave it open and just like hear people. Kind of like when we're on Discord, most everybody's using like a speaker feature or some headphones or like some Shox headphones, like Bone Conductor or something like that, and you can just hear everybody talk. You don't have to push anything unless you're on
so
that.
So you have played with it a little bit.
A little bit. Last night we used it.
Nice.
We didn't like use it too much though, because we're all using Discord, and I think that that's still a little bit more refined. But,
yeah, sure.
But the fact that they're doing that, step in the right direction.
It's one of those things where it's like, whenever we talk about like, well, what, you know, what does Zwift need to do? And they're like, well, obviously this, right? Like it's just such an obvious thing. And then it's been, how long has it been? 10 years or something that Zwift's been around and they still haven't done it.
Yeah.
So it's cool that RGT did it like, not out of the gate, but like pretty quickly they were able to get started on implementing it.
What are they going to be doing
numerous.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I've had numerous business meetings or like work meetings where someone's like, hey, let's have a call and we'll both just jump on. You know, when we were testing the talk feature in beta, I was like, hey, let's just meet. And well, it wasn't like an important meeting where we had to be typing stuff down. Like, let's just go for a ride and just chat together, which worked out great because most times you're just, you know, chit chatting anyways.
Yeah. That's correct me if I'm wrong though. To talk though, it's like a walkie talkie. You have to depress it or push it, have your finger on there while you're talking, then you have to release for it to stop talking. Is that how that works? Or is it just that you can hit a button, it's always on?
There are a few different features. So you can have it where you can just talk to your group. You can like create your own group where there's chat. You can talk to everyone. It really depends on which feature you want to activate. You know, for a while it was, I think that we were working on it where you, like a Peloton, you can only talk to people near you.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, you know, obviously if you go to the front of the pack, you wouldn't be able to hear them, but if they drift back, you could then speak to them.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and they're literally developing this like as we speak. So even this week, they've changed something where by default, it used to be like only within 45 meters of where you were, like Ian's talking about. And then now by default, I think it's the entire course. So it's all changing and they're figuring all this stuff out. So I would expect for...
I didn't even know it was a thing until our ride last night. I had to upload or to do the update right before I started the ride. It popped up. I'm like, oh, that's new.
I mean,
kind of played with it, but we didn't. So
yeah, it's all new.
Gentlemen, I'm going to run and grab my charger. Keep talking. My computer's at 2% battery.
All right.
One sec.
Thanks, Ben. What else do you guys think that the whole Wahoo X thing is that's so fantastic that could be better, but it's going to separate from Zwift? That's kind of what I want to talk to him about.
One of the thing I really liked, because I haven't used really RGT until we rode last night, but one of the things I really liked was the fact that you can see exactly how many watts you're saving when you're in the draft.
Yep.
If you're,
yeah, that's cool.
If you're riding next to somebody, you're saving like 10 watts. And if you get right on their wheel and you're going pretty hard, it says you're saving 182 watts. You're like, oh my gosh.
You're like, your eyes just light up with wattage.
Yes.
Like, look at all my watts. Just hang behind the slowest big person you can find.
That part was really enlightening to watch, really how many watts you actually save when you're sitting in the back of a group.
Sure.
I think it's a really nice platform overall because you've got like System, which is, you know, a very competitive like platform for getting really good work done. You've got RGT, which gamifies it a lot, and I imagine that'll just get more and more merged. And then recently also, like, Wahoo is actually offering some deals where it's like, hey, you can get a kicker snap, which is not my favorite trainer, but you can get a kicker snap and the RGD platform, or I'm sorry, the entire Wahoo X platform, all for, I want to say $30 a month.
It's like $29 a month.
Yeah, and so it's like $30 a month. Yeah. And it's almost like, well, here's this, you know, one piece thing. Like, I pay $30 a month and I have all my indoor stuff ready. It's all ready to go.
Yeah.
So the integration of everything is excellent. I do wish that they had chose a different trainer because I think people are going to...
Not the kicker snap.
That might just be a good way for them to get rid of the rest of the snaps that they have. Because I think I'm not mistaken, those are being...
Phased out,
yeah.
Maybe. I just think my fear is that people are going to get on that and be like, well, indoor training's not for me, or like whatever it is. Like, or they have a bad taste in their mouth just because of that particular trainer.
Yeah. I know. You don't have to go that route, but it's a very affordable way to get into it.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with you. Gotcha. Anything else? One other question I have, I guess, is how are they going to step up against Zwift when it comes to the race leagues? That has become immensely popular. How are they going to try and go toe-to-toe with Zwift on that front? Is that something that they're interested in?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, it's something that we've already worked on. I think coming up here in a couple of weeks, I think we have like the Belgian National Esport Championship, same with Canadian National Championships are held on RGT. You know, I think it's more just a matter of like, you know, getting people to test out the platform. And you know, one of the cool things with, as you were saying, with RGT is that you could build your own group ride by yourself. And you could go on right now, and if you want a Tuesday night ride, you can invite all your friends. It's free, you know, so it's accessible to anyone. You don't need to have a membership. You don't need to work with Zwift to set up, your own personal ride. I think it's one thing as e-racing continues to advance and, you know, the metrics and, you know, how races are measured. And, you know, I did a couple of Zwift races back in 2018 or something. And I'm not a gamer. And I just got smoked every single race because people start sprinting and there's all these power-ups. And I had no idea what, you know, how to play the game.
Yeah.
And I think one thing, you know, as e-racing becomes more specific to more bike racing versus gaming, it's a much more realistic ride and kind of experience to, you know, it's more resembles bike racing versus, you know, video gaming.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's just a matter of, you know, it's not a new program or software, but, you know, it hasn't had the support that, you know, someone like Zwift has had until kind of Wahoo took it over. And so now it's just a matter of like, you know, getting people on the platform to see, you know, the benefits of riding on RGT.
Gotcha. I really hope that people aspire to want to come check out RGT. And Zwift is a great platform, but I think that there are some nuances to it that kind of don't lend itself to like true bike racing. bike riding, and I really like what they're doing. Another thing I really like is the folks over at Wahoo were super kind to provide us with a discount code, or I guess it would be more of like a free code, to get 3 months free of the Wahoo X, which is a $45 value. We'll put that down in the description of this, and we'll share that with everybody.
Don't just give those things away, man.
I used it last night. I signed up last night.
I need to snag one of those things.
It's pretty fantastic, and to be able to get to use that this time of year is going to be pretty awesome. And then you come join us on all the rides, and you can check out all of the platform and what it has to offer. I think there's a huge value in terms of what they are offering in a dollar amount that's very similar, or if not exactly the same as Zwift. So I think pound for pound, dollar for dollar, you're going to get much more bang for your buck there.
And on the system stuff, you can watch Ian chop down trees.
You can. Well, we probably have that wood burning in our wood stove this morning. So, you know, I guess one more thing that I would add with Wahoo X, and particularly with system, is, you know, there's not just cycling workouts in there. You know, there's core workouts, there's stretching, there's yoga, there's mental training, you know, especially this time of year when people, you know, maybe aren't necessarily ready to ride inside. You know, I went down and did a short ride this morning. I was like, you know what, I've been doing too much riding outside, you know, over the course of the summer to now be like, okay, we don't have snow on the ground yet. So I'm not necessarily super motivated to, you know, put in the hard miles in my basement, you know, so getting on there and doing, you know, a yoga class or some, you know, strength training at home where you don't necessarily even need anything other than, you know, some carpet and a water bottle, a great way to just like stay active through the winter and kind of, you know, get ready for the training ahead.
Gotcha. Any other questions on the system stuff?
No, I like it.
And anything that we might be missing that you want to talk about with respect to the Wahoo X or system or anything Wahoo related? Anything we might be missing out on? Some hot tips?
No, I mean, I'll just say give it a try. Yeah, give it a try. Definitely try the week with that I did. Phil Guymon did one, and Neil Henderson has done one as well, which is fun. You know, I think it's a great way to like get to know someone outside of, you know, maybe how you hear them on a podcast and walk around their house and kind of see their life and in a different, you know, from the comfort of your home, which makes it nice and easy for you to get to know someone and train for them for a week.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, on that note, let's call that done. But we normally do in our podcast, we call it one last thing where we get to say anything that we want. I think that this podcast has been long enough to where we don't need to do anything else audio wise, but I would like to do one last thing because I have something that I want to ask him here. And if you guys want to do your one last thing, that'd be real quick. That'd be great. Lance, you want to start? Or actually, Matt always starts.
Matt starts.
Why do I always have to start?
Because you've always got something right in the queue.
I will review this Wahoo Rome version 2. Let's say sometime next week, I'll try to put a video out. YouTube.com/Emily Grand. Get on it.
Love cool.
it. Subscribe. Like and subscribe. hit that like. Smash the like button.
Smash that like button.
Do that.
Cool. Lance, one last thing.
We have all the fun cyclocross races happening this weekend. Ooh. So the cyclocross there's a doubleheader. It's out at Cascade Locks in the Columbia River Gorge. So a race on Saturday and a race on Sunday. The Saturday race is always full bore. The Sunday race is always a costume race. If you come and you are not in costume, you will be heckled uncomfortably.
Are you going to be heckled either way?
You'll be heckled either way because that's what cyclocross
just
is.
Just a little bit less.
But you'll be heckled even more if you're not
like,
in costume.
I feel
costume.
Like it'll be fun to show up without a costume just for the heckling, it's just for the
not,
fun of it.
It's not pleasant. It's not fun heckling. So I always show up in costume. I believe I'm going either as Duke Kaboom this year or a homecoming princess.
You've done the homecoming.
I've done the homecoming princess, so I'm hoping to go as
Duke Kaboom. There you go. So, cool. My one last thing is funny because there was a listener that asked this question that popped up here. Scott Troutman asked, he thinks that you won, and I think maybe you got second place, but you were out here in the Portland area, and you went and did a race over at PIR on the road earlier this year, if I'm not correct.
Or it was last year.
Was it last year? I think it was this year, wasn't it? Or was it in 2021?
Last summer. Yep.
Okay. So
I think I was second, maybe. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. And you put a smile on so many people's faces. They're like, oh my God,
Ian Boswell
is out here racing with us. And that was just a big treat. So thank you for doing that. But what made you want to come out and do a race with PIR? Was it just kind of like come out and say hi to the Ober community?
Yeah. I mean, that was actually one of the most fun rides I did last year. My buddy Jacob Rathy lives in Portland.
Yeah.
You know, I was up staying with him and, you know, because, you know, I love riding my bike. And, you know, we got to do this awesome ride out to PIR. I think I'd done it once before when I was younger and living in Oregon. So we rode out there. We did, you know, did PIR, got a super hard race in. And Jacob said, oh, people never win from a breakaway. I'm like, all right, we're going to see if we can stay away in a breakaway. And we did. There was three of us or four of us. And we just like absolutely killed it for an hour and a half.
Nice.
And then we got to stop, and you know, I got to see Candy Murray, who I'd known really well back in the day when I was racing in Oregon, and connect with all these old people. And then once the race was over, we all rode to get burritos and a beer, and then I got a ride back through downtown Portland on a Tuesday night at like 10 p.m. when it was dark, and it was like just such a fun ride. Portland in the summer is a really cool spot to be when it's not raining, which I hear you have less rain now than ever before. So probably have a lot of those nice evening rides.
We joked that October was the new August. This past October was crazy until I think it was like the 21st or 22nd. We were averaging 80 degrees, sunny skies every single day. It was bonkers.
It was a little odd.
Yeah.
It was great. It was a great odd.
So just out of curiosity, when will you be back in the Portland, Bend, Pacific Northwest area? Do you have any plans of being back in this neck of the woods?
At some point next summer. You know, my mom's still in Bend. My dad moved to the Southern Oregon coast.
Cool.
So at least once a year, I'll get back out there. And, you know, there's a couple, I haven't actually raced a gravel bike in Oregon yet. So maybe coming out for Oregon Trail or one of those races up in the gorge would be a fun way to come back and
tie
in a trip to see my family. Yeah.
I'll be at Oregon Trail this next year, or the plan is to be at Oregon Trail. That's actually where I became close friends with, I shouldn't say close friends. I'm personally close, tight friends with Yuri Oswald. In my own mind. So that's where my wife and Yuri's mom met and connected so well. It was during the Oregon Trail Gravel Grinder, so that was fun.
Cool. For Ian's last thing, I feel like he needs to give us a lowdown on where we can follow you, what we can do, like what the process is. You mentioned the podcast or his own podcast early in the recording here.
Yeah, so let's do your one last thing. You can make it that and anything else you want.
You can follow me on Instagram. I think it's at ian.boswell or _boswell. And then my podcast, Breakfast with Boz. You can find it at any streaming platform, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever you get those. And my last thing would be, I'm heading to Philly Bike Expo this weekend. I've never been to Philly Bike Expo, so I'm looking forward to getting a Philly cheesesteak. And I think there is a cyclocross race. And as you were saying, I love heckling people during cyclocross because I don't race cyclocross. So hopefully there's a cyclocross race where I can go heckle people. And being close to Halloween, I'm sure that there will be some people in costume.
The city's pretty high right now on the Phillies. Beat my Padres, which was kind of a downer, but that should be pretty fun to see how they kind of handle themselves against the Astros. So kind of a baseball crazy there right now. So good luck with that. Cool. All right. Well, Ian, we really greatly appreciate you joining us and all of the folks over at Wahoo for helping support that. If you ever need anything, if you were ever in the Portland or Vancouver area, the Pacific Northwest, don't hesitate for a second to call on us and we'll be happy to help you out with anything that we can. And help you out. Love to do it. So
appreciate it.
Yep. We appreciate you. We will be back next week with another one of these, probably not live on YouTube, but we will be back nevertheless. And until then, bye for now.